Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Save big on everything when you shop at Menards. Upgrade your kitchen today with Clearview Cabinetry. We offer a great selection of finishes made with the finest materials and built to withstand life's sticky messes. They provide features like soft closed doors and drawers and with cabinet accessories to match your unique style. View our selection of Clearview Cabinetry on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer and find plenty of great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
The Burt Show.
Time to get buzzed on the hot goss from Hollywood with Abby. It's the Burt Show's entertainment buzz.
The biggest story on the interweb right now is what the heck is going on with Brianna Chicken Fry and her ex-boyfriend, Zach Bryan. If you missed this story, in the last couple of weeks, it feels like pretty much everyone in Gen Z has been wondering what happened in their relationship. So Zach Bryan is probably one of the top three biggest country stars right now. I mean, if you like country music, you don't need me to tell you who Zach Bryan is, but he's definitely like, if you're thinking about the big three, Zach Bryan is up there right now. So he's been dating this girl named Brianna Chicken Fry, who works for Barstool Sports. She's a big media personality. And out of nowhere, this was a big shock to people, they broke up. And a lot of people found this shocking is because what we've known about her is that she's been kind of distancing herself from Barstool Sports. She's had some turmoil or some turbulent relationships with people she's been friends with her entire life. And we've seen this relationship kind of take over her life. They moved into a house together that she now says was the house she thought they were going to raise their kids in. And then all of a sudden, one day, Zach Bryan is spotted on Raya, and we all knew their relationship came to an end.
So was she saying that she was like shocked, like it came out of absolutely not, this breakup came out of nowhere? Because 90% of the time, I don't believe that.
Well, I think in hindsight, it doesn't come out of nowhere. Like when you look at everything, and I think that's what she's doing now is kind of taking a tally of all the times she was miserable in this relationship, but just couldn't really see it because she was in it. I don't think now it's a shock. I think when it happened, she was like, wait a second, you were telling me we were taking videos for our future kids 2 weeks ago, and now we're broken up?
So what I gathered from what Abby has told us, maybe the breakup didn't come out of nowhere, but how he handled the breakup did. So is the fact that they broke up and then he made this public announcement less than 24 hours. Mm-hmm. So she didn't have a chance to process. And I think, you know, obviously how he handled himself throughout the relationship, but more so how he's handled himself post relationship has really opened her eyes. And that's why we're getting the tea spilt that we are.
And so now, of course, the people that are closest to her, her coworkers, Dave Portnoy and another guy named Josh Richards, they are so thrilled that she didn't sign this NDA and take $12 million because they have been sitting on some hot tea and they are so sick of this guy. They are ready to put his name on blast.
Okay. So, cause I'm not super close to the situation and I can tell that you are. So I want to ask you, because I, you know, from what I know of Barstool Sports, I'm not the biggest fan. There's been some questionable things that they have said or posted or whatever. And I am wondering, are they really looking out for her better interest or are they exploiting this situation because they know they are getting so many eyes at Barstool Sports right now?
So I follow Portnoy pretty closely. I actually like the guy, I got to be honest with you. And he generally is a pretty honest guy. And I think that's what people, he's rough around the edges for sure. He says what's on his mind for sure. He's a little bit conservative for a lot of people's takes also, but he says the truth. And I think he knows at the end of the day, this is good for him. But as you said earlier this morning, he sort of made her the offer like, You can go ahead and take that money. We don't need to do this at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think deep down, he's like, oh, thank God, this is so good for the brand. But here's the thing. He even said on the episode that came out last night, he's like, I was ready to end the podcast that we did together. But obviously now this is happening. We've got to talk about it. So sure, like, yeah, is he probably secretly happy that he gets to profit off of it? But he also told her, like, this is up to you. Like, $12 million to not speak up about your breakup is life-changing money.
We are obviously at a much smaller level than that. So let's bring it all home here, right? If this had happened to Abby comes to me and she tells me what's going on and she's got it wouldn't be a $12 million thing. Let's say $1 million that you're dating a guy and you come to me and you're like, should I take the cash or should we capitalize it on the show? I would have immediately said, don't say a word. Take your $1 million.
Well, yeah, but that's a little bit different. Brianna Chicken Fry, like, is a huge media star. Like, she's going to get $12 million at some point. For me, I'm like, $12 million? Let's do, I'm moving to, you know, Dubai.
Is she going to make $12 million eventually? I mean,
she will. I mean, yeah. She's a pretty big influencer to where, like, she isn't making Zach Bryan money, but I mean, she's living the kind of life to where she can have the sort of freedom that she doesn't need to be envious of $12 million because she can still pretty much do whatever she wants and still wear designer clothes while doing it.
Do you think we are going to see the Ariana Madix effect, like after Scandoval, and how she, like, obviously they had their own reality show, but like maybe on a little smaller scale where, you know, she becomes like this heroine and she's getting endorsement deals and she's doing a commercial for Energizer.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think it depends on how she handles the breakup moving forward, because I think a lot of people, there was a little bit of a Brianna Chicken Fry hate train. Like, as horrible as this relationship has been for her, from a PR standpoint, it's the best thing that could have happened for her, because the last thing we knew about Brianna is that she was separating herself from her longtime best friend, Grace, that she did a podcast with. And a lot of people were like, she's not a girl's girl. Look at her leaving this guy or her best friend for this guy. But now that we know what's happened behind the scenes with this relationship, if she can mend fences with all these people that she's publicly distanced herself from, I think a lot of people are going to be more willing to get behind her.
I think this is a little bit different also than the other situation you were talking about. Because here we're talking about a relationship where he certainly was very controlling. I haven't heard all the details. I don't know how much of a D-bag he was, but he's a controlling guy, maybe a manipulative guy. With the other relationship you're talking about, he was having sex with her best friend in the house while she was right there. It's almost like,
yeah.
I don't know how you have levels on rotten behavior, but that sounds like you could capitalize more on that than this really bad relationship.
And plus, Ariana and Tom were together for 10 plus years living in the same house. But I feel like on a smaller scale, depending on how she spends this, she didn't get the $12 million payout now, but I do think she's going to reap some financial rewards along the way.
100%. All right, three people have been charged in Liam Payne's death. I'll talk about how they could be held accountable on your next eBuzz on The Bert Show.
So you listen live to The Bert Show? First of all, thank you. But you can only listen, what, 20, 30, 40 minutes, maybe an hour if you're in the car. And we thank you for that. But if you can't get to the rest of the show this morning, you're going to miss like Texting Tutor, where we actually helped a woman text her husband to get into a fight. You don't have to miss that all day because we upload it on demand on our podcast. You can listen anytime you want. It's The Bert Show on any podcasting platform.
The Bert Show.
You might not know the name, but you'll know the voice. And when you hear who passed away, you're probably going to go, oh, that's part of like as I was growing up. Elwood Edwards just passed away at 74 years old. Elwood Edwards is this voice.
You've got mail.
Whoa.
Right?
Aww. I remember logging into AOL.
Oh, my God. Yeah, man. It was like, I would sign on and that voice wouldn't come on. I'd be like, nobody liked me.
Of course, you had to hear that weird dial-up. The
oh, God, yes.
Right. You've got mail.
AOL fooled us all, though, man. Remember they had those CDs, right? And you had free email for a while. Then your subscription would sort of run out. And we were like, now we got to pay for this thing? What? At one point, I was reading this morning in like 1998, 50% of the CDs produced worldwide had an AOL logo on it.
Wow.
Really?
Right?
Wow.
And this voice was heard all around the world in different languages.
You've got mail.
We no longer have mail.
Oh, I'm still getting mail. All right, Cassie, it's got some real heaviness going on.
Yeah, it's been a really tough couple of weeks. Well, I mean, years, but still the past couple of weeks, particularly tough. For those who don't know, my mom was diagnosed with stage 2 breast cancer a couple of years ago, and she beat it. And then it came back in full force. It spread to several areas. It's stage 4. She's undergoing treatment at MD Anderson in Houston, which is one of the country's best cancer institutes. So we feel really grateful for that. And the oncologists have always been very open. They're like, we cannot cure your cancer. You will always have cancer. But what we can do is try to arrest the growth and stop the growth. I mean, the treatments and the strides the scientific and medical communities have made in treatment of cancer, mind-blowing. I mean, they have done some treatments. Some have worked, some haven't. But for the most part, they've been able to stop some of the tumor growth, which is incredible if you think about it. But it's really taking a toll on her, and it spread to another area of her body. And I was out for a few days last week to go to MD Anderson in Houston with her while she got a treatment done. And, you know, we were all in good spirits. She was so tired, like she's falling asleep sitting up, but she's powering through. And so after her treatment, which was like we were all day from like literally like 6:30 in the morning to 2:30 p.m. in a windowless basement room waiting for her to get this done. And if you've listened and you're a P1, you'll remember Rebecca on our show, who has had tongue cancer, was telling us about her mask that she had. She used to have to be bolted down to the table, and we destroyed it in a wood chipper. Well, my mom had to have one of those made for this surgery. And so she's going through this whole process, and she is just, you know, keeping up the best spirits that she can. And so after the surgery, she's tired. We go back to her room, and I run downstairs to the restaurant because there's a hotel attached to the medical center that has a cafeteria. I mean, everyone at MD Anderson, they must weed out people with bad attitudes. Mm-hmm. I'm not kidding. There was not one person who didn't want to help me, from the baristas at the coffee place being overly pleasant, but not in a saccharine fake way, like a truly nice way. The custodial staff. I remember at one point I was looking for a heated blanket for her, and I couldn't find a nurse's station. And two dudes in suits who were clearly like very high level directors stopped, went down the hall into restricted access areas, and brought my mom a blanket. Wow. Like, that's the kind of people you want the earth made of, people at MD Anderson. But I'm sitting at the bar, and of course, it's all cancer patients. That's all who's there, and their families. I'm sitting at the bar waiting for our food order to come by myself, and I'm having a glass of like beer and just a pint of beer, a glass of beer. Jesus, this is a pint of wine, what I should have had. And I'm just listening to the conversations around me, and there are two patients next to me chatting, and they're in great spirits. But one laughed, and he's like, you know, they're like, what are you in here? It's trading cancer war stories. And he laughed and goes, well, none of us are getting out of here alive. Mm. And that hit me so hard. And I started crying at the end of the bar because he was right. And I wasn't talking to him. That wasn't my conversation. I shouldn't have been eavesdropping. But when you're alone at the end of the bar with only your thoughts, I'm like, oh, God, no, I got to drown these out. And, you know, that is, he had such a great attitude about it. And he was like all about living life to the fullest. And, just being like, they told me I had 18 months, and look, here I am 18 months later, and I'm doing fine. And I was like, that is such a great mentality to have. But that line, none of us are getting out of here alive. And I'm like, well, that's kind of true about life in general.
It is.
And you also don't really know when your time is, whether or not you have cancer. I mean, there's a much shorter timeline, but any of us, we don't know how long we have. But that hit me because it made me really realize, this whole time I had been really holding on to this hope of, while they can't get rid of the cancer, I was hoping that it would be a treatment enough where, and this is probably foolish of me or rose-colored glasses, that it would stop the growth of the lumps and the metastases enough where she would go on to live her natural lifespan.
Sure, I think everybody and every family member that has to go through this thing is hoping for a miracle.
Right.
That never goes away.
There are other diseases that have in the past been death sentences, and now there's modern medicine that can help sort of stop those processes. So you still live with it, but your lifespan is much longer now. And I was really foolishly thinking that. In my head, I was like, okay, she's got to get these treatments. This sucks. It's going to be, you know, she did chemo. Her hair fell out, everything. Such a trooper. It came back and we were devastated, but we're like, it's fine. It's going to, or in my head, I'm like, it's going to be fine. And I don't know if it's going to be fine. And my dad's prepped me. He's like, you know, this will kill her, right? And I was like, well, I know.
And your dad's a doctor, right?
Yeah, he is.
So he's got that kind of mentality also. And he's English.
Yeah, he's very British. So he's just like, he's not being mean. That's just, he's very
practical.
Yeah, practical. He doesn't sugarcoat stuff. He has empathy, but he's not sugarcoating. And I'm like, well, obviously, but in like 20 years in my head, I'm like 15 years, she's got time. And he's like, well, we don't know. It could be less than a year and it could be 5 years. And that really shook me because, again, I was foolishly being like, we got lots of time. She's going to see my kids grow up. She's their only grandmother. She's going to be around for that. And I don't know that she will be. And I'm holding on to the hope. But this, I know I'm talking about myself a lot. What I really wanted to get out of this was I wanted advice on how to cheer her up because she is doing a great job, but I can see that it's taking a toll on her. She's exhausted. Like I said, she's falling asleep while sitting up and she is still like, I mean, while we were there, she's like, no, we're going to go out to eat together as a family. We're going to go get this amazing Mexican food. And I'm like, Ma, we can eat in the room. Like, you need your rest. But no, she wanted to power through because she wants to make those memories. And she doesn't want to pretend that it's not happening. And I don't want to put words in her mouth by any stretch of the imagination. This is just what I'm seeing. But I can't imagine what it feels like inside for her. Knowing this and hearing another cancer patient say, none of us are getting out of here alive. And then my dad sort of, you know, giving me a reality check that I needed. And I want to make it so that she still has hope and she is still happy and feeling good about life. And I don't know quite how to handle it because my family's growing up has always been like, you know, you skin your knee and it's not, it hasn't really been, oh, no, you skinned your knee. Are you okay? It's put a Band-Aid on it. Get up and go. Like, you're fine. And that had really affected me my whole life, like brushing off pain, being like, get it together, go. This is different. And so I want to respect the fact that she is going through all of this. And I don't know if I should treat her differently or not, I guess is what I'm saying. And I don't know how to keep happy. Like, do I keep on and carry on like everything is normal so that she has a normal life for the rest of her years that she's here? Or do I take into account that she has cancer? And I don't want to use the word pander because that has negative connotations, but cater to that and make things a little more gentle. I just don't know how to navigate this process where we're in this. It feels like a life and death limbo.
I wish we had segments that could be longer so we could really embrace this whole thing for a longer period of time. But I think you have somebody next to you that has gone through it. And I also think, doesn't the hospital and aren't there therapists that specifically focus on this issue right here on how you should deal with it or what's healthiest and your family also?
Yeah. And, you know, that's my own stupid thing to deal with because, you know, they invited me to stay in the hotel attached to the hospital. And I was like, no, those rooms should be saved for the people who need them. And my mom was like, you're the family member of a patient that's for you. I stayed at a different hotel, though. But I feel like I shouldn't be using those resources and that they should go to somebody who is in a worse place and needs it more.
You're in that place.
Yeah. It's tough. And I think I also am a little resistant to it because then it makes it more real.
I know. I'm so sorry. I hate this for your mom. I hate this for you. I hate this for your entire family. What I'm going to tell you right now is you are a caregiver and that's a really hard job. Okay. So you need to change your mindset. Those hotel rooms are for you. Okay. You need that. Any of the resources that the hospital offers, please take them. And like what Bert's talking about, as far as like they have social workers, family workers, family services, please take advantage of those. I think you and your mom, unfortunately, do need to have like a somewhat tough conversation and kind of let her decide how what would be beneficial for her. Instead of you trying to like guess what she needs, try to get her to articulate what she needs if she can. Because you don't want to leave anything unsaid and you don't want to leave anything undone. Right.
And I hear you. I'm just afraid if I have that conversation and
I know
it's going to make her feel like I don't have hope and that I've given up.
She's married to a doctor. She knows. Okay, so I commend you for handling this so delicately because it's such a complicated, hard process for everybody involved. But obviously, she's the nucleus, right? And you want to do everything in your being right by her. And there's no magic words. There's no perfect fit. Every cancer patient is different. They're going to like handle the news differently. Like that guy at the bar is going to handle it one way. Somebody else is going to handle it a different way. Somebody may not want to talk about it at all. Somebody may really need to talk about it to help process it. So I think just having an honest conversation and a kind conversation with your mom, be like, I want to be here for you in the best capacity that I can. And
how can I be there for you and make this as easy and as pain-free as possible? Because there are certain things that you're going to want to do and you're going to hold yourself back from doing it because you don't want to remind the person that, you know, this is terminal and that you don't know how much time you have because you want to make the most of that time. But sometimes by making the most of that time, you're shining a light on the fact that, you know, they have this. Mm-hmm. And it's really, really hard to navigate. And I again, my heart bleeds for your family. And I hate that you have to go through this. And
I'm so angry as well. Mm-hmm. Her mother passed away recently, like a year or two ago before she got the diagnosis. And her mom was 92. And I'm like, it's not fair.
Yeah.
Her mom got to live till 92. It was my grandmother. And my mom is in her 60s and got cancer. And who would have thought that when she told me that my grandmother Josie had passed away, that within 2 years or 3 years, she would be receiving a terminal diagnosis. And I'm like, that's just not right. You know, I know life's not fair, but how come one person gets to live into their like almost mid 90s and see the birth of their grandchildren and another one who was the best mother and tried so hard and dedicated her life to her family is not going to even get to see her grandchildren maybe see their teen years? And it's just, I'm having such a tough time grappling with that. And when I see, I know this is ridiculous, but when I see people in jail who are like serial killers or terrible, terrible humans who are living out their sentences in jail, I'm like, why? Why can't they get the cancer?
Yeah.
They hurt other people. My mom's a nurse. She spent her life helping people and caregiving for people. And at the end of the day, life turned around and gave her the middle finger.
It's not fair.
Mm-hmm. It's BS.
It's not fair. And it's, I don't want you to ever suppress that feeling because it is BS and it's not fair.
The world is cruel.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying really hard to hang on to hope and goodness and, you know, see the best. But it's really, really hard when you see injustices. And we see it as well with every Burt's Big Adventure family who has gone through the heartbreak with their children. I couldn't even imagine the pain I feel with my own mother, but seeing a child do that. And I'm just like, why? Why?
It makes you see the world differently.
It does.
And I'm sorry that you have to see that side of the world.
Thank you.
Because it's not fair.
There are a ton of people on the phones that want to talk to you. So I am going to put them on hold. And a lot of people are going through the same thing that you're going through. And I'd also suggest if you're going through this, because, I mean, when you look at the cancer rates in this country, there's a lot of people going through the same thing at the same time. I hit up Cassie today and use your experience to help her out. Where do you want them to reach out to you?
Cassie@thebirdshow.com would be great.
All right. Love you much. Big hugs.
Thank you, guys.
Love you.
It's The Burt Show.
The Burt Show.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Revenge is the word of the day on The Burt Show. And leave it to Barstool Sports and Dave Portnoy. And what's her name?
Brianna Chicken Fry.
Yes. That has really come back with revenge in a very, very, very big way. Now, years ago, we did Songs of Revenge.
12 years ago.
12 years ago, oof, right? Dave Portnoy did the exact same thing. He did a Song of Revenge, but it wasn't for him. It was for his coworker.
It was for Brianna Chicken Fry, who is currently going through a breakup with one of the biggest country music stars in the world, Zach Bryan. He broke up with her out of nowhere, and they're thrilled because they're like, we always hated this dude, and we want to tell you all why. So they ended up putting together a diss track that Zach Bryan had taken down, but it's still kind of floating throughout the internet, as you can kind of hear it.
Trust me, got your pants on fire. Trust me.
got your pants on fire. Tinder bubble riot. Knew you was a liar.
It gets kind of nasty there after a while, but it is a good example of a bad song of revenge, which we were way ahead of this on.
Well, no, we were not. They're diss tracks, y'all. I mean, that's essentially what they are.
Yeah,
but in this instance, songs of revenge were specifically about you have been wronged by an ex and you were going to put them on blast.
So like Kristen said, we did this years and years and years ago, and we would love to bring it back and offer it for you guys also. If you want to, over the weekend, make a song of revenge for an ex, we'd be willing to play it right here on The Burt Show. Years ago, we did this. This one was Listener Nikki.
Hey there, stranger. Long time no talk. Weren't we scheduled for a date at 7 o'clock? You said I was a great woman and you missed me so much. Told you to step up your game. No more shadiness and such. I was dressed up and ready. You were nowhere to be found. One might conclude that you were on the rebound. What was the point of blowing up my phone? You are the most dishonest person I've ever known. Couldn't break it off to text, not even an email. I know that's not how you were raised to treat a female. How about my rap and your lesson plan? You wish you had my talent. You are such a con man. Used to think you were awesome. Clearly, I was incorrect. Stand me up. You got it twisted. I demand respect. You left these at my house. I found them on the floor. Figured you might need them when you're with some. No more excuses. Now I'm going to be the one who was chucking up the deuces. No more. I miss you.
All right, so that gives you a pretty good example there.
Nikki was the one that kicked it off back in 2012 with songs of, as Bert used to say last night, songs of revenge.
So do you have one in you? Is there somebody that you would like to produce a song of revenge about? We are sure willing to play it on The Burt Show. All you got to do is produce it and send it to us, all right, at theburtshow.com.
The Burt Show.
All right, it's one of the hottest shows in America, even around the world right now. Love is Blind, right? Abby's been watching it, and I think anybody that has actually watched the show or any kind of quote-unquote game show like this has wondered, like, give me peeks behind the scenes. How do you pick these people? What really goes on? Are we being manipulated? And BuzzFeed had a great article on this.
Well, fans are furious and want to know about the casting process, all because of one storyline that happened on the most recent season, season 7, that took place in Washington, D.C. And one of the couples that actually stayed together after the show, their names are Ashley and Tyler, but 2 weeks before they got married, he dropped a bombshell on her that I think in any other normal situation would lead to somebody going through a breakup. And basically what happened was Tyler revealed to Ashley that he actually had children, like biological children out in the world. And he hadn't revealed this to her prior to this. And let's be real, like they were in the pods, they were getting to know each other and then decided to get engaged and then went on the big Cabo vacation with everybody. And now 2 weeks before the wedding, he's just now telling her this. And she told him, she's like, listen, I'm not mad that you have children. I'm mad that you decided to wait until now to tell me. And the thing is that these aren't children that he fathered with like a girlfriend. He said that he has a lesbian couple or friends that are lesbians that are together, and they couldn't afford to get a sperm donor and couldn't afford to go through the actual process. So he was like, you know what? I feel like this is something good I can do for them. I'm going to donate my sperm so that they can have children.
That's very altruistic of him.
Very altruistic of him. So he has three biological children, you know, through his own sperm, but also through like the eggs of the lesbian couple. So he, for some reason, decided not to tell Ashley this and keep it from her for a couple of weeks, because that's how long their relationship was before they got married. And people are like, how did the Love is Blind producers not know this going into the season? This is something that should have been vetted. And so BuzzFeed decided to do an interview with one of the producers. And this was their explanation. They said, we have a very rigid vetting process. We have background checks and psychological evaluations. If someone has children or doesn't have children, that doesn't preclude them from participating in the process. If somebody has a bad relationship with their mother, or someone's had a certain sexual experience in the past, or someone's in debt, all those things are very common for the vast majority of people. We think it's important. Oh, basically just saying, like, this shouldn't have like cut him off of being mm-hmm. cast. Like it's his own fault for not explaining in the beginning what his relationship history was with this couple. And so a lot of people were confused because when we saw the conversation on Netflix, it kind of seemed like it was like halfway through their conversation. And the producer explained that they don't get filmed 24/7 like in a lot of other reality shows. So, and they think that that's a good thing. Like they need some off-camera time. So basically when producers knew that this was going on, they were like, get the cameras, we got to start filming them. And that's why it seemed a little bit abrupt.
That would be a really hard thing to try to vet. Like, just have to have the producer's backs on this. My niece and her wife just had a baby, and they went the same route. They had a friend who was kind enough to donate his sperm, and that's how they had the child. He's not on the birth certificate. Mm-hmm. The two of them were on the birth certificate. So I get people are being upset, but if he doesn't disclose that information, it's very hard to find that out.
Yeah, there's a great, I mean, I've mentioned the show before, Unreal. You can watch it on Hulu, and it gives you such great peeks behind the scenes of reality TV shows. This one was done by a former producer of The Bachelor and Bachelorette, and that's the person that wrote it, and it really gives you insight on exactly how manipulative, the manipulation, I should say, that goes on behind the scenes.
It's also just a really good show.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, I don't think the producer should get really any flack for this. Like, truly, what did he do wrong other than be a sperm donor to two friends who he said they needed it? And really, I mean, it's his fault for not fessing up sooner. And I understand why that's a hard conversation to have. But it's also like, this is what you signed up for. Like, you're getting married in 4 weeks. Have the conversation 2 days yes. in. Like, we got to go on fast forward here.
Yeah. Yeah, we're on the clock here, people. Yep. Let's go. All right, Rebecca is in here, our producer. Our flop era, and what exactly is it?
Well, I'm in my flop era, and that's okay. Because as one woman tweeted, what if I flop? But my darling, what if you slay? Sorry. That just tickles me so much.
But that is such a Gen Z way to say, but what if I fail? And then somebody says, but what if you succeed?
Right.
It's literally the exact same thing.
Flop and slay, baby.
Flop and slay.
Well, always remember, the flop is always the hardest before the slay.
What exactly is your flop era?
So a flop era, as Urban Dictionary defines it, is when something goes badly or is unslay. It is those superficial, petty problems every person experiences in their life, like having a bad hair day or forgetting a credit card payment or something like that.
Okay, I think I can do one from yesterday. Tell me if I got this right.
Go for it.
All right, so first world problem. I'm going for a massage yesterday. Been a long week, very long week. Just needed to chill out for an hour, right? So I go in to get a massage. She comes on up to me. She's like, 3'8". I'm like, oh man, she's never going to be able, this is going to be so relaxing because I'm not going in there for one of those hardcore Swedish massages anyway. So she says, what are you here for? I say relaxation, but there is an area in my shoulders and neck that's been bothering me for months. And she goes, okay, all right. She dug so hard in me. I am so sore today from this massage. I need a massage from my massage. Okay. Is that somewhat like it?
That is giving flop era moments.
Okay.
Yeah, you came in wanting something. You thought it was going to be a slay, and it was not. It was flop.
She's like, I am going to fix that neck and forget about the relaxation part of this whole thing.
But today I'm coming in because I want to do an exercise where we turn our flop era moments into a slay.
Okay.
We are going to flip the flop, and we are going to become slay.
Okay. Flip,
flip
the flop.
Flip, flop, flip, flop, flip, flop.
So if you're willing, I'd love to go around the room and share why you all are in your flop era moments, and we will reframe it to slay.
Okay.
And this will require audience participation because after I share why I'm in my flop era, I need you all to point at me and yell, flop!
Okay.
Okay. Then after I share why I'm in my slay era, I need you to wiggle your finger and go, slay. Got it?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Point for flop, wiggle for slay.
Yes. I'm in my flop era because I'm currently growing out my mustache to get it waxed this weekend, and it's a lot more visible than I prefer.
flop.
But that means I'm serving androgyny, and that makes the ladies hot.
Slay!
Great job, heterosexuals.
It's the Bird Show.
The Bird Show.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Time to get buzzed on the hot goss from Hollywood with Abby. It's the Bird Show's entertainment buzz.
It's been a big year for beefs. 2024 is the year of the argument.
I was thinking charcuterie.
Beefs? You immediately went charcuterie?
I swear to God, I did. I was like, oh yeah, nice, nice pastrami, ooh, nice pepperoni
with a spicy mustard.
Ooh.
Oh yeah. Anyway.
Okay, a little prosciutto.
Yes. Oh, I'm all about that prosciutto.
Speaking of beefs, 2024, the year of the beef. We had Kendrick Lamar and Drake. Now we have Zach Bryan versus the whole staff at Barstool. And now it looks like there's a little game show beef going on because there's a new game show host in town. It doesn't seem like the people at Jeopardy are happy about it because Travis Kelce got roasted through a $200 Jeopardy clue this week. Here it is.
Are You Smarter Than a Celebrity is hosted by this man who's maybe more famous as a boyfriend than as a three-time Super Bowl champ.
There. Who's Travis Kelce?
Correct.
Oh. Ooh. Shots fired.
The boys are fighting. But listen, I think that's a great compliment, and specifically as a lady, because we've seen so many women be called Leonardo DiCaprio's girlfriend or Denzel Washington's wife or whoever. Like, there's so many women that are just associated with their men that there's a small part of me that's like, oh my God, I love that he's just Taylor Swift's boyfriend or girlfriend.
I feel like inside of me is that guy years ago that was protecting Britney Spears, and I just want to yell, leave the Kelce brothers alone! Leave them alone!
I think it's all in good fun.
It's been a rough week for those dudes.
It has been a rough week. You know, just Mercury's back in lemonade or whatever, so I feel like everyone's just been kind of going through it. Okay, three people have been charged in Liam Payne's death. If you missed this story, which how could you if you have been paying attention to the news at all? Well, former One Direction band member recently passed away after he fell off a balcony in Argentina. It was pretty much presumed that there was some drugs involved. He was inebriated, under the influence, and now three people could be held accountable for his death. So there are three people involved here. Argentinian authorities have ruled out self-harm. I actually think I saw somewhere that the video footage shows that he fainted, like fell off the balcony. So it wasn't like a leap and a jump for something intentional to happen. So this happened on a hotel balcony in Buenos Aires back in October. And the video, again, shows him fainting, not jumping off the balcony. One of the defendants who could be held accountable is described as a friend who reportedly accompanied Liam on a daily basis during his stay. This person is being charged with, quote, abandonment of a person followed by death. And then the other two people that are currently being charged, they are being charged with supplying Liam with the drugs. Toxicology reports confirmed that Liam was under the influence for at least 3 days leading up to his fall. He had traces of alcohol, cocaine, and a prescription antidepressant in his system.
All right, so I want to make sure I understand this. The two people who were supplying drugs makes total sense. But the first one, abandonment of a body. So you mean somebody was there when it happened and they didn't report it to the authorities?
No. This person is charged with abandonment of a person followed by death. So let's say, this is my understanding of the situation. Okay. If I think you're a danger to yourself, like you're super inebriated, you're hanging off a balcony or whatever, and I bounce, that I think is what they're describing here. So I don't think anybody was in the room with him. And then they were like, bye.
Okay, so abandonment followed by death, right. Not, okay.
None of this really totally surprises me. As we've said before, celebrities are not like us. They can get what they want. They can use their celebrity. People are eager to give them what they need and be part of that circle also. It's not hard to go to a hotel and find an employee going, hey, where can I find blankety, blankety, blankety? And somebody will do that for you. Now you're going to have to pay the price.
100%. And I think it's important that these people are held accountable because, especially like with everything going on with Diddy, I feel like there's been so much privilege where they've just been able to do whatever they want. They live above the law. They're able to treat people however they want to treat because they have
have the money and power to be able to do it. And, you know, when there's benefits to, you know, accompanying a celebrity and maybe slipping them some drugs, like there needs to be proof now that like when you become a danger to someone by enabling them or not looking out for them and not having their best interests at heart, like you're going to be, you could pay the price eventually. Okay. There's a reason why you may prefer to hear live music as opposed to just listening to something in your Spotify when you've got your headphones in. I never understood this. Like growing up, my family, like we were not concert people. But like I didn't go to my first concert until actually to see One Direction when I was 15. And then I was just excited to be there because I wanted Harry Styles to look at me in row 504 and go, that girl right there.
In 504.
In 504.
I was in college when I first when I saw my first concert.
Who was your first concert?
You probably won't even know the band. Don't even matter. Bangles?
No. Yeah, I've heard of them.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Yeah.
Mine was high school.
There was?
It's P. Diddy and the Family.
I was convinced the same way you were. This was on San Diego State campus, and it wasn't at a big venue that the lead singer of that band was going to look down and see me and go, come on up here, big boy.
Yeah.
And by big boy, I mean I was like 117 pounds.
Yeah, me at 15, I was like, I'm shaving just in case. But basically, neurosurgeons are saying that when you go to see live music, it's just a little bit more interesting because you never know what's going to happen. They could change the notes, makes your brain get more excited to hear it. All right, a former NBA star recently visited a doll factory in Vegas to get one that looked exactly like his ex-wife. I'm going to tell you the tea on your next Eva's on The Burt Show.
The Burt Show.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.